Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Welcome to Upfront. I'm Chloe Morgan.
And I'm Rachel O'Sullivan.
The Lionesses hit Austria for 7 on Friday, and it was a brilliant debut for Grace Clinton. We're here with our thoughts on England's free scoring performance while Rachel brings the latest vibes update from the camp out in Marbella. Serena Wiegmann has also brought some of the under-23s into the senior setup for training. So, who are the rising stars you should be looking out for in the run-up to Euro 2025? We give our picks. And finally, Spain have qualified for the Olympics for the very first time. But what is going on with Alexia Putellas? Rach, I'm not going to lie. Before you went away to Marbella, I felt very, very jealous that you were heading out to a sunny country, going to get an awesome tan, going to go out, watch the Lionesses for the first time in 2024. I tuned in on Friday in Brighton. I'll come to my moment of the weekend in a second, to see the rain flooding the pitch. I've got to say, I did feel a little bit smug. I'm really sorry. I apologise in advance.
I love that you thought I was going to get a really good tan in a week. That's the best bit out of that whole intro.
But I just felt quite good. I felt quite that I wasn't going to, you know, I wasn't going to get massive FOMO from the weekend. That was the fear, wasn't it? You sort of, you know, especially like you're going to be out there with the Lionesses and the under 23 squad, a kind of a chance to see this incredible squad rotation that we'll get into in a little bit later. But yeah, I mean, what's been the kind of highlight of the weekend out in Marbs for you?
Well, I was going to pick a different, I'll tell you my highlight of Marbs, but let's go my general highlight, yeah, because I just caught it before we started recording this pod. And it was the goal from Mayra Paleo to win, for Mexico to win against the United States.
I mean,
her goal is actually insane. They beat the United States 2-0. And Mexico is the first CONCACAF team to defeat the US on American soil since Canada in 2000. 2000. There's no other years added onto that. The US was unbeaten in 80 straight home matches against CONCACAF opposition, winning 78 and drawing 2.
I was 10. The last time that happened. Just to put that in perspective, we didn't even have Sky then. I didn't even have a mobile phone when that last happened, actually.
Yeah.
So, I think I got a Nokia 3310 actually when I was 11. So yeah, that is interesting. That's the most shocking statistic out of all of that. Yeah.
So I had to pick that. My Marbs moment was maybe the first night when we came in, got ourselves sorted on Airbnb, went straight to a media day, came back, and then went down for dinner. And when we hit the seafront, like it was our first time getting down to the seafront, it was just the most glorious sunset I think I've ever seen. It was absolutely beautiful. And then we had tapas. So that would be it. Now I'm going to go over to you because obviously you have a big moment of the weekend that you want to share.
Of course. I mean, I went down to Brighton this weekend, took part in the Brighton Half Marathon, which was absolutely incredible. And thank you so much to those people who donated, raised quite a decent little sum for the Alzheimer's Society. But on the route, we actually saw quite a lot of women's football teams, which I absolutely loved. And there was like a couple of my old schoolmates when I used to go to Leeds, a couple of the old Leeds football girls were there at the finish line. And I didn't even realise. They messaged me later on saying, mate, we saw you looking all hot, bothered, sweaty and quite disgusting at the end. So that was probably my highlight of the weekend. Yeah, it was a good one. But also being able to catch the rain on Friday and watching, you know, everyone in the stands sort of have a small drowning moment in Marbella, because I had just seen that photo of you and Soph pop up, you know, with the sunset looking very sort of, you know, very happy and gleeful. So yeah, I'm not gonna lie, I was very, very bitter. And that ended on Friday. And that was also a moment of the weekend for me. Right, let's get on to it then. England thrash Austria. Absolutely dominating performance in Mirador, beating them 7-2 after the disappointment of missing out on the Olympics in the last international break. I mean, this was an incredibly free scoring game. I mean, so much so that obviously, I mean, Jess Carter got on the score sheet. And it wasn't just she got on the score sheet, she got on it in phenomenal fashion. It was the most beautiful back heel. I mean, she almost looked a bit embarrassed by the fact that she'd done it. I don't know whether she thought maybe initially she was offside, but I think it was just the glamour of the way that she scored that maybe sort of took her back a little bit. She's quite a modest player, and I don't suppose moments like that happen to her very often.
I'll be honest, I initially thought she was offside, which I then thought from her reaction she was offside. Yeah, filthy little back heel. It was one of those, like, I'm not sure if it was going to go in if she hadn't done that. Like, I don't feel like she massively changed the trajectory of the ball, but I think it just put the goalkeeper off, because I think it came from a lot of Roy header, didn't it? But yeah, I think it was just seeing players coming on and impacting the game in the same way that the starters had. Mm-hmm. Overall, just not what I was expecting, I don't think. You know, I looked at that starting lineup and thought, Austria, hard team to break down. Yep. There's a lot of changes and people have been calling for changes and say, Serena never changes her teams. Well, bloody hell. This is a very changed.
Well, let's get into that, because it kind of feels like, you know, we have seen England struggle for goals in the past recently. So what do we think was so different in this game? Because to me, they came out, they had confidence, their press was working well. There were five different goal scorers. They were calm at the back, dealing with the press that Austria... I mean, I don't think Austria's press was that effective anyway. It was kind of like a half-arse. But Hannah Hampton, again, very calm and collected, playing the through balls, kind of seeing the, you know, where the extra space was. But yeah, what did you think was so effective for them this game?
I feel like they were playing with a weight off their shoulders. Mm-hmm. You know, they were playing a game that didn't really matter. Things had kind of gone tits up around the Olympic qualifying, almost like it couldn't get, not that it couldn't get worse, it's a bit dramatic, but like it was almost like a refresh, right? New year, new you, hon. You know, a new competition to be focusing on, an opportunity to try new things, to put to bed the sadness of the World Cup, the missing out of the Olympics. I think there was a freshness about them and also a freedom with some of the younger players that maybe don't always start, mm-hmm. that maybe they didn't feel that pressure because they've not necessarily been in those moments where they've missed out on a World Cup final. Do you know what I mean? So there was a bit like it's almost like their pressure was off a little bit.
It looked like they were enjoying themselves.
Yeah. And they just looked tidier and some of the, you know, they weren't stressed about stuff. So simple things looked tidier and just better and gone back to basics a bit, rather than, you know, when we're watching games with really high stakes and the pressure's on and they're kind of, you know, missing passes and sending balls long and stuff like that. I think the fact that there was no stakes on this game helped massively and they could just go out and enjoy themselves, which they probably haven't been able to do for quite a while, given every game has meant something and has had a lot of pressure on it.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there. I mean, if you look back at the sort of history of the Lionesses since Serena's taken over, I mean, she's always had to work towards something super important. So for the past 18 months, really, like you said, every single game has been critical to gaining qualification or winning a tournament or, you know, trying to make history for the Lionesses. And you think, my God, the weight of that for such a sustained period of time is huge. And it felt like Serena had probably gone into that game, had a team talk, like, as before they stepped out onto the pitch and been like, like, do you know what, girls? Just go out there, have fun, enjoy yourself. We're playing with a, you know, a little bit of a different setup. Loads of new players coming in, looking to make their debuts, looking to make a mark, you know, looking to make an impression for the Euros 2025. Let's use this as sort of starting block one, that bit of that reset. And it was an enjoyable performance. I mean, Beth and, you know, Alessia together, that the combination that they had, I thought they were absolutely phenomenal and kind of leading the line and sort of showing, you know, you had the experience of Beth Mead, and obviously Alessia's incredibly experienced, but still, you know, super young in herself and her journey into where she could be. And I just thought, you know, watching that was really amazing. But I mean, there was obviously, you know, quite a few new lionesses, sort of, you know, we had Grace Clinton in there, Esme Morgan, Myla Tizier getting their starts as well. I mean, we've got a question in from Mary. She said, which one have you most been impressed by? Which of the new lionesses have you most been impressed by? Is it an obvious one?
Well, I would say Grace Clinton,
no.
But I know we're going to come and talk. We're going to talk about her in a second. So I'm going to give a shout out to Myla Tizier.
Okay.
Playing in a fullback role as well, which she has done in the past for Brighton, has been playing central defence for Manchester United. I really like her in a fullback role. You know, that kind of who's going to take over from Lucy Bronze question has been a tough one. You know, we've struggled with left backs as well. I think that both sides have always been a bit of a concern with England in terms of either who's there now or who's going to be there. And I just thought she looked really assured. You know, she dominated. She was, you know, defensively sound. You know, she does go up the wing well, but maybe not to the extent that Lucy Bronze does. Mm-hmm. So I was quite impressed with her. I really liked seeing her there. And she could be a really good alternative for Lucy. But I obviously, we can move on to Grace Clinton. I thought she was excellent. There was a real, like, she said she was nervous, which is understandable.
Didn't see that at all.
No, playing a slightly different role. But I feel like the nervousness fueled her. Like, she was quite dogged and determined. So, like, if she lost the ball, she turned around and she was after that player to get the ball back, which I love to see, as opposed to a bit of a strop and a shoulders down and I've made a mistake. It was like, damn you, get back here. I thought she did great, and I think she deserved a goal as well. So to get a goal on your debut is
massive.
Must be pretty special.
Well, I think it was almost a sign, really. She came on, she looked tenacious, she looked hungry, she looked like she really wanted to be there, and the occasion, or the pressure of the occasion, you know, I know it's only a friendly, but still, like, she wants to make a good impression, she wants to impress Serena, she wants to impress her teammates, and, you know, she's done so well in the WSL, you want to see that translate over into an international football. And, like, even from, it was minute 14, I mean, she hit the woodwork straight away. Incredible shot. Zinsberger had absolutely no chance, sort of saw it hit the woodwork and kind of looked, she was, I think Zinsberger had resigned herself to the fact that it was in. And then, yeah, in the 18th minute, yeah, 4 minutes later, she has this amazing sort of salmon-like leap in the box, this beautiful header, amazing timing. And the ball has floated over the head of Toon and Russo. And it just felt like there was this, like, you know, like, she's hit the score sheet. First goal for the Lionesses on her first game, and you could tell how much it meant to her and the rest of the squad. All the Lionesses kind of, like, crowded around her. You thought it was like the winning goal of the Euros, the way they celebrated with her. Yeah, and I mean, she said it was probably the biggest game of her career so far, and that she couldn't wait to see her mum and dad after the game, which I thought was absolutely super cute. And what a game for them to have attended. I'm so glad they didn't miss their flight to Marbella. Ella Toon's comments after the game were really striking. She said, linking up with Clinton felt so natural. And Wiegmann, again, also said she plays like a natural. I mean, Rach, you must feel quite validated. The way that she performed, you've been one that's been calling for her, you know, inclusion in the squad for a while. I mean, do you feel like she's the kind of natural fit there and potentially even, you know, got her a starting place, perhaps? Is that too far?
Maybe a little. It would depend, I suppose, on the match and what the match calls for. But I think what she's shown is that she can step into the team pretty seamlessly. Mm-hmm. And even though she was nervous, that didn't really come across in her performance. You know, bear in mind she's playing with Georgia Stanway, who was playing in a deeper role, what she kind of plays a bit more for Bayern Munich, but not what we're used to seeing for England. I thought she linked up well with Ella Toon. And it just, we saw that confidence, and we've seen that confidence in the WSL. And it was great to see that she could step into that senior role and out onto the pitch, and it didn't kind of dip. That confidence or belief in herself didn't dip, which I think is really important, because sometimes you see that when a younger player gets introduced into the senior squad. And I guess it helped as well that it was a no-stakes match. So the more minutes she gets in these moments, you know, the better she'll be when it does come to a high-stakes match and she needs to step in. And I think she'll do a great job there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the only kind of negative from the game, and Serena was kind of saying this in a press conference after, was that, you know, they're still, even though it was a, you know, a very comprehensive win, there were still a couple of things that she wasn't too happy about and needed to tweak. And a lot of those were sort of the vulnerability, I suppose, from set pieces. I mean, conceding sort of two very identical goals from the same goal scorer. And I've got to say, like, the first goal in the 30th minute, Kurt from Kirkberger, which was the header from the corner, it looked like she was Clinton's marker. That's the only thing I would say. So I suppose you cannot fault her in the attack, absolutely. But I suppose maybe there's just a little bit of work, a little bit of retweaking there to be doing on sort of defensive set pieces for the whole squad, definitely. But yeah, that would be the only thing that I'd say. Maybe that's an area to work on, but she's still so young. You mean it's, you really can't find fault with what she did. We've got a question from David on X. He said, wishful thinking on my part, but do you think Spurs have any chance of signing Grace Clinton permanently? That is very, very wishful thinking, especially now the cat is well and truly out of the bag with a debut goal at international level. So what do we think?
I don't think that's wishful thinking.
You don't think it's wishful thinking?
No, why not? I think they have as good a chance as any. I mean,
you're joking.
She's enjoying herself there. She's been given the freedom to play and the confidence to play, and the manager has given her the confidence to step in and to play. My fear would be if she ended up back at Man United, she'd be on the bench. You know, so she's an influential player in that Spurs team, and it's that has gotten her into the England team. So I don't think it's too far outside the realms of possibility.
If I was part of the Man United setup, and obviously it's been quite interesting actually this week, because obviously we've just heard the news that Polly Bancroft is leaving her post as head of women and girls football, and she's done a great job at the club. But if I was the Man United or part of the Man United setup, I'd be thinking, as soon as that summer window hits, I am bringing Grace back. She is getting into the squad. I am not giving Spurs the competitive advantage. I mean, Clinton signed with Man United until July 2025. Yes, absolutely. She will 100% want to get minutes, and she's getting that consistently at Spurs. But I think the performances that she's put in for Spurs, and also now at international level, if she continues to do this, I'd be thinking all day, start getting her those starts back at Man United to get in with, you know, the likes of Paris and Jay-Z. I mean, she would be, that could be the turnaround that Man United need for next season. Just saying.
It could, absolutely could be. It's just the kind of how good United are at holding on to players, etc., recognising players they should be playing.
Our track record hasn't been great.
I would
agree with that, yes. Another one to start this weekend, Hannah Hampton. I found it rather surprising that she didn't start for Kiara Keating. But at the same time, I think you have to appreciate that Hannah has been at international level for quite a long time now, really. Given her age, it seems surprising, but she might be considered sort of natural second choice given the England experience that she's had. And now she's sort of back in the fold after that brief spell of being out, where it looked as if there was sort of some kind of tension between her and Serena at some point. But I think it would be quite interesting to see if she starts the second game. What I did find really odd, actually, was sort of the camera panned over to the bench and seeing Mary Earp sitting there in a bib. It's not something I don't think I've seen in a very long time. And I just found it really unnerving and quite bizarre. I did a double take. But yeah, were you kind of surprised to see Hampton? Were you expecting Kiara Keaton after the fantastic performances she's had in the WSL?
No, not really. That's not a surprise. I think currently Hannah Hampton is number two, I think. Serena Wiegmann wants to nail down that number two as well. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't surprised. You know, Hannah Hampton's been playing. She's been playing for Chelsea. They're both playing for top clubs. So, you know, maybe we will see Kiara Keating against Italy. I would love to see her against Italy. But I think the fact that she's in and amongst the squad and training and everything, and I feel like cemented her place as a third choice keeper, that's the big thing for me.
I really hope she does start. I've kind of pegged her out to kind of have her first international start, and it feels like the right fit. It's a game that, again, it doesn't matter. There's no pressure. I think she deserves to start based on how incredible her season's been with Man City. And it would be an historic one for the Lionesses. She would be the first mixed-race black goalkeeper to have ever started for the Lionesses. And that in itself would be a really beautiful moment.
Pretty cool, yeah. I think as well, it depends on what the match calls for, you know. Austria, we're always going to play a bit deeper. Italy are going to press higher. Is Kiara a better fit for that kind of match, mm-hmm. where they're going to be playing out from the back more? You know, and I'm sure all of that comes into it as well.
Well, we'll wait and see. It's not long now left to wait. But yeah, fingers crossed for you, Chiara. Hoping you get your minutes in. Even if you do a half, that'd be great. Talking of sort of the combinations of the kind of mix around, we did see a lot of rotation from Serena. I mean, it was quite nice, I think, to kind of see that at every single step, like the goalkeeper, defence, midfield and up top, there were new people sort of embedded in every line. But which combination, I suppose, got you the sort of most excited on Friday? Which did you think, okay, I can see this kind of developing into something very special here?
Well, it's not so much develop, like it's there. Beth and Alessia, it's there. But I think firming it up a bit more with Alessia starting, you know, the fact that they play with each other at club is really beneficial as well. And I think we're starting to see that. And it's maybe something that's lacked a little bit. You know, having Beth Mead back in the squad as well is really important. And I think that's an area that England have been lacking over the last few windows is goal scoring. Mm-hmm. So seeing that link up was really exciting. I thought they looked great. They look like they've been playing together at club as well, which I think is important. I'm surprised Beth played the full 90 minutes, to be totally honest. I did think she'd come off. Maybe she won't play the full game tonight, but we'll see. But I think that was probably the most exciting. I think it's really interesting now that Russo and Mead are like the mature heads in the squad, and Beth Mead was like the oldest on the pitch, or the, as she said, like the most mature, or the, you know, player on the pitch, which is just a really weird one to wrap your head around.
Well, you kind of saw the impact of their partnership really early on. I mean, within 3 minutes they got the opener. So Russo, that fantastic hold up play sort of in the midfield section, and then sort of playing out to Beth on the wing, whipped in that ball. Unfortunately, sort of another, I mean, I've got to be quite critical again, the Zinsberger error. It was sort of a fairly easy pickup, sort of slipped underneath her. I understand, obviously, it's a bit of a wet day, but still you'd expect her to be doing a little bit better, which isn't great coming off the back of the sort of West Ham game where sort of a big error then sort of cost them the points. And then Russo following up, and it just felt like a really great template, I suppose. I too am sort of interested to see how that sort of, you know, continues to, will keep growing, basically.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But this international break is really about the youngsters. Serena brought in several of the under-23s into senior training on Sunday, including Naomi Lazelle, Jess Naz, Laura Blinkhilder-Brown and Aggie Beaver-Jones, who also made it onto the bench on Friday. Now, I was slightly gutted not to see her get some minutes, to be honest, at least at the end, you know, 5 minutes. Rach, obviously, you've been in Marbella watching the under-23s. They lost against Spain 3-1 on Thursday and then drew 1-1 with the Netherlands. Yeah, what have you made of their performances so far, being out there, being able to see it live and see what's been going on in their camp?
I thought they were really unlucky against the Netherlands yesterday not to win it. They deserve to win it. They should have scored more goals. But I'll start with the Spain game. I think first 30 minutes or so, I thought they were pretty dominant, and I thought they deserved to be ahead, and I thought they deserved to have scored a couple of goals, but they conceded quite near the halftime whistle and went in 1-1. There was some good you know, connections, but I felt like there were some players, I guess, maybe who aren't getting regular minutes. You know, Ruby May started, I thought started really well, but as the game went on, I felt like that dipped a little bit. And I think some of the substitutions as well, I think we've become accustomed to now in the WSL, when substitutions are made, the level doesn't really dip. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a little bit of a dip there. You know, they probably don't play together that often. Some of them might not be getting as many minutes as others. And I think Spain were able to kind of put their foot down and you know, dominate that second half to win it. But the second game, I thought they were much better. They this time started slower, really grew into the game, deservedly went ahead, should have scored more goals. They had a couple of opportunities to score more goals. I thought the Dutch keeper had a really good game. And I think there was a little bit of naivety at the end of the match where we got to kind of the 88th minute and they were trying to like kill time and play the ball into the corner. And we'd had two kind of significant injuries during the game. So you knew there was going to be a good bit of stoppage time. So to be trying to do that with potentially 7-8 minutes left was a little bit naive. And the Dutch then went and got the equaliser in injury time. And you could tell that was a real sucker punch. But, you know, look, there were some players in there that are really exciting. It's a really good in-between team between going from kind of your under-19s into the seniors. And I think there are some players that will benefit so much from this to step into the seniors. I think the senior team came, a lot of them came to the first one, a good few came to the second. And maybe that arrival of the senior team maybe coincided with the dip in form, perhaps. And maybe they got a little bit nervous. But no, it was great to see them play. And there's definitely a few that I'm excited about.
I think it's really interesting to get your perspective on it because obviously you were there and you can kind of see a lot of, you know, the really positive points to take away from the games. Whereas a lot of people, I think, are probably seeing the headlines that, you know, we've lost 3-1 to Spain, we've got the draw against the Netherlands, you know, in a sort of tournament setting, I suppose, that have only picked up 1 point from two games. But, you know, based on those under 23 matches this week, are England falling behind Spain for young talent coming through? We had that question in from Jenny.
No, I don't. Wouldn't take that away from it. I wouldn't look at that and say we're falling behind. I mean, the under-23s is an in-between. Mm-hmm. It's a stopgap between, you know, your under-19s and getting into the senior team. It's a really valuable squad to have to help you bridge that gap. You have to remember that, like, we don't wait until players are 23 before they go up to the senior squad. So there's players in the senior squad now that could be playing for the under-23s. You've got Hemp, James, Clinton, Keating, Park. You know, you put all of them back into the under-23 squad and suddenly you're like, bloody hell. Do you know what I mean? So you kind of have to factor that in. It's about like the spread of kind of the quality across the age groups. Some countries maybe are better at it. Some countries don't need to bring up or don't have as many under-23s that need to come up because they've got so many seniors that are such high quality. You know, I think everyone's in a different stage of their journey. And yeah, I wouldn't make any kind of sweeping claims that this means England are falling behind. No, I wouldn't be too worried. I mean, Spain are dominating in every age group, which is understandable. But, you know, if you look at the scoreline, 3-1 doesn't look great, but actually I don't think it was super dominant by Spain where they just swept England aside. I wouldn't have put it
that way. So I think based on the kind of performances that you've seen so far, I mean, who do you think are the England stars, the rising stars that listeners should keep an eye out for sort of next year and going into Euro 2025? Which ones do you kind of see are getting their, you know, big starts or getting their sort of, you know, big call-ups next year or this year even?
I thought Aggie Beaver-Jones was superb. She was one of the best players on the pitch in both matches. Not just what she does on the ball, but like her communication and how she kind of conducts people and all that kind of thing and where to stand and to come up higher and to come with her in the press. And she really stood out for me. And I wouldn't be surprised if we saw her in the senior setup soon enough. You know, she's only coming on at the moment at Chelsea as a substitute. That might change with Mia Fischel being injured. She might get more minutes. But you see what she does with the few minutes that she has at Chelsea. She scores bloody goals. So she's been brilliant. Ruby Mace looked good. I'd really like to see her get more minutes at club. That's the only thing, because if she can play like that when she's not getting minutes, you know, imagine how she's going to be when she is. Ella Morris has been good as well, another fullback role. So
what about Jess Naz, my mate Jess Naz, how's she getting on?
She was better in the second game, I thought. She was good as well. I thought she linked up well with Aggie. I think maybe the first game, she took a little while to get into it. I thought Spain maybe bullied her a little bit off the ball, which I thought she had improved massively at Spurs. Mm-hmm. I felt like physically wise, she'd gotten almost looked like a senior player now. Do you know what I mean? Rather than kind of coming off the bench, she was starting games and, you know, she was able to physically get defenders off her and stuff like that. And I thought that was a shift in her style of play, because she's always had the footwork and that kind of thing. So I thought that was a real improvement in the WSL. And maybe in the first game, she just looked a little bit off it, and that she was getting knocked off the ball quite easily. But in the second game, she was much better, and she was causing the Dutch defence all sorts of problems with her pace and linking up, as I said, linking up well with ABJ. So another one. I mean, there's so many.
I think, I've got to agree with you there, but I think the fact that ABJ has now sort of moved into even sort of getting that bench start, if you want, for the first time against Austria, I can kind of see her, that feels like Serena getting her that experience of, you know, being in around the setup, you know, fully being in around the setup whilst there's, you know, a competitive game going on. And I reckon that she'll probably get her first minutes in that Italy game. And I think she deserves it. I think she's been absolutely incredible for Chelsea when she's come on. I think, and I think a lot of fans kind of just want to see her get those minutes.
You have to bear in mind, though, as well, is that, you know, Fran Kirby and Chloe Kelly weren't available for that first game, mm-hmm. which also would have helped facilitate bringing an under 23 up. Fran Kirby's gone home, but Chloe Kelly should be okay for the Italy game. So whether that impacts someone starting on the bench from the under 23s, I don't know, but just want to keep an eye on. I don't think if she doesn't get a bench start, it's not because she hasn't performed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. Do you think we're now sort of seeing the beginnings of Serena's next revamped England team? She's kind of, we've had the era of the Euros, of the World Cup. We're sort of stepping into a new age of, you know, heading towards the Euros in 2025. We've got, 18 months until that tournament starts. Jess Park came on as a sub on Friday while Myla Tizier and Esme Morgan started in the back four. She was incredible. I thought she was just as tenacious as we've seen her in previous performances with Man City. I mean, she was just, it was a bit sort of Grace Clinton-esque. It felt like she just wanted to be involved. She was so enthusiastic and so energetic. But do you think that we're sort of seeing this kind of, you know, as I suppose we saw the Serena take the Lionesses from how they were sort of in the Steph Houghton era into the kind of Leah Williamson era. We lost Jill Scott, we lost Ellen White. But yeah, does it feel like that's where we're sort of heading to seeing that next gen?
To a degree, mm-hmm. I think she's utilising these rare friendlies to see some fresh faces and give them minutes, which I think is really important. And I think it's often too often forgotten that it's just been major tournament after major tournament and then a Nations League, which is something you have to win to get Olympic qualifiers. Like, there's been very little time for that rotation. And, you know, to see that now is really important, because what you touched on there, depth, that's what England need to get. That's what we had at the Euros, where your players come on and nothing changed in terms of intensity and quality. And they need to ensure they can maintain that in every position. And I think getting minutes is really important. Getting some new faces in that we know can back up your Millie Brights, your Lucy Bronze, your Kira Walsh's. They're the kind of areas that maybe in the past we've thought, if Kira Walsh gets injured, what the hell do we do? If Lucy Bronze gets injured, what are we going to do? You know, so I think seeing those faces in now and seeing them perform well is key. And hopefully then you start to see them as regular faces, because you need to be able to trust the players you're putting in. And if they're not getting minutes, you don't know that in a certain situation that they're going to be able to deliver. So I think, yeah, seeing them now in these friendlies is key.
Well, do you think it was a bit of a stroke of genius? I mean, it was, you know, Wiegmann who sort of revived the under-23 setup when she came in as England manager, sort of, like you said, right, it's kind of bridging the gap between the under-19s and the senior squad, making sure that it's not such a massive transition when they do eventually make that step into senior life. But you sort of look at the fact that it is a bit of a contingency or a sort of plan B when, you know, players in the sort of senior squad are injured or something, you know, untoward happens. But, I mean, do you think that's, you know, what do you see the sort of under-23s role being? Because, like you said, it's a bit of a weird one, because you could have so many of the senior squad in the under-23s and they could be absolutely smashing it. So
it's so valuable. You know, even just talking to the likes of Hannah Silcock after the game, and she said how valuable it is just even being in and around the senior squad, like players that you see on TV. Now you're like in a hotel with them, or you're you know, at a training with them, and they're just other players, they're just people. And I think it kind of takes the edge off that kind of the senior squad, if you like, and making that big leap. And of course you're going to be nervous if and when that happens, but I think being in and around the squad kind of takes away some of that. You know, some of the players, you can chat to them, they'll take you in, they know what to expect from you in a camp. I think the under-23s has been crucial to, yes, we've got players that are young enough in the seniors, but it needs to not be a massive leap. And I think having that stepping stone of the under-23s in between, A, it helps. I think it raises the levels of play, the quality, because you're going to have players in there who are probably starting in WSL clubs or championship clubs. So it can raise the level another bit, if you like, compared to, say, the under-19s. And then when you get into that senior setup, it doesn't feel like such a massive jump. So, yeah, I think it's invaluable.
Well, off the pitch this week, the FA made a huge step. It has now made women's health training mandatory for the WSL and Championship clubs, becoming the first national governing body to do so. So basically, they're mandating training on female health, sort of working in partnership with the Well HQ, who are specialists in delivering female health strategies across sports and clubs in the women's professional game. So now the sort of the clubs are going to receive these sort of new courses, best practices, guidelines on things like pregnancy, the menstrual cycle, kit, fertility, pre and postnatal health, pelvic health, injury risk and nutrition, which is great, obviously, it being sort of across the two leagues. You know, you normally find with things like this that it is something that's just rolled out on the WSL. So yeah, this will basically mean that, you know, the clubs are going to get better support, and it kind of feels like a bit of a proactive thing to be doing. And obviously, it was only last week, you know, Leah Williamson out of the England squad with a sort of, you know, still ongoing injury niggles. Mia Fishel, again, another confirmed ACL last week.
That's Jamie Finn.
Jamie Finn. Yeah, so it kind of feels like we keep receiving these really high profile injury news, but this feels like a really proactive step into saying, okay, well, we are still trying to figure out the research, we're still trying to get the data, we're still trying to understand what it is that's sort of causing and impacting or contributing to these injuries, but let's actually dedicate someone in the club. So they've got to have a dedicated specialist who will, you know, go and do the Well HQ training and deliver this training to players. But it's also, it feels like I don't know, that the players then have somewhere that they can go and, or someone they can go and speak to about their health concerns. I mean, Rach, what have you made of the kind of news? How do you see it?
You're right, it is proactive, but it also feels like an absolute no-brainer. And it kind of makes you realise where we are with women's sport, that things like this are quite groundbreaking. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You would think in any industry where you're specialising in something, you'd need to know your subject really, really, really well. And you'd want to know your subject really well. And you'd want all the research, you know, around your subject. And I think we've talked about it before, that something like 90% of sports studies are done on male athletes. You know, so having this is massive because you need to know everything. And subject is such a kind of cold word, but realistically, you need to know everything about them. You need to understand menstrual cycle, how it impacts the body, everything. And it makes so much sense. So hopefully, and this is, the other thing is, you have to kind of factor in, this stuff isn't going to change things overnight either. Mm-hmm. These studies and these projects and these trainings and stuff like that, it takes a while. But the fact that it's being invested in, and ideally, you know, turning the way we approach women's sport and getting it to face the right direction a little bit, is massive. So it's really exciting. And we know Dr. Emma Ross from the Well HQ, I spoke to her for our ACL episode. So it feels like they're in good hands.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's quite interesting, I suppose, because you're starting to see, you know, we're literally just talking about the under-23s, the under-19s, these young players getting into, you know, playing, you know, at club level regularly, and also now playing at international level from, you know, a really young age. And it feels like, you know, this is the kind of precedent, this is the kind of status quo for them. They will be stepping into this year knowing that that is kind of the baseline for them. Whereas even if you look, you know, 2-3 years ago, 4 years ago, when I was still playing, you know, one, we didn't even have maternity rights in our contracts at all. And now sort of 4 years later, we've got maternity rights covered in the training, in the contracts. But also we're now being given a dedicated person to say, okay, well, these are what your rights are. These are how we're going to approach, you know, your pregnancy. This is when you should stop training. This is how we sort of tailor you off into birth. And this is how we cope with things afterwards and, you know, support you in the best way that we can. So it feels like, you know, even little things like that enable players to be able to, you know, really look proactively at how they plan for families, or, you know, what right, and knowing that they have that security of kind of, you know, knowing what to do if they want to do that in future. So I think it's nice now to kind of, that we're sort of getting into this stage where, yeah, the older players will, you know, obviously take this on board, but the younger players will see this as the new normal, which I think is absolutely amazing. So yeah, but like you said, I think it's one of those things, it's change is not going to happen overnight. We're going to 100% have to wait and see sort of how this pans out, and I think it's going to be one of those things that will probably need to be developed. There'll be other things that players will come up with, hopefully, that say actually we need some more support in this area, or but I think that will grow. So yeah, I'm going to take that as a positive. I think you've got to take the positives when they come, and sometimes they don't come very often in women's football. So congratulations, FA and Well HQ. Very interesting to see how this all pans out. Right, let's move on to the Nations League. Spain have secured qualification for the Olympics for the first time in their history. They beat the Netherlands in the semi-finals of the Nations League in Seville on Friday night. France beat Germany in the other semi-final, guaranteeing Spain their place because as hosts, France are already in the final 12 teams competing this summer. I mean, Rach, what are your thoughts on Spain becoming the new heavyweight champions of the world? If Spain win this Olympics this year, do we think we're looking at a kind of USA-type dominance for them?
No, I don't think we're going to have... Like, I don't think we're going to have another team that will be as dominant as the US was.
Ever.
For 20 years, the US was the most dominant team. I think, obviously... Spain are favourites. Obviously, they're the best team in the world. But I think it's a different era of women's sport. I think the growth and the levels that other national teams are growing and improving makes it very hard for any team to completely, I think, dominate absolutely everything, you know, and be unbeaten. You know, Spain have been beaten in the last year a couple of times. I think Italy beat them. You know, like, I think with the USA... they're so bloody hard to beat. And Spain are hard to beat, but I just think, I don't want this to sound like I'm saying Spain aren't good, because obviously Spain are incredible, one of the best teams we've ever seen. But I just think the ability to be dominant for 20 years is just going to be even harder now.
But do you not think the counter-argument to that is, like, you look at the strength of their squad, you look at the fact they've got, you know, Hermoso, Bonmati, they've got Onabajic, they've got this, you know, Catacol, they've got this incredible, incredible squad. And not only that, they've got this incredible squad of under 23s as well. So that to me suggests that there's some longevity in their success. They're not just looking at their senior squad and going, do you know what, we've absolutely nailed that. The under 23s are absolutely bossing it as well. That to me suggests that there's at least sort of a 3-4 year reign of dominance kind of on the horizon if they get the next couple of years sorted.
Oh, sure. But 3-4 years isn't the same as the US level of dominance.
It's like a mini dominance.
It's quite different. A mini dominance, sure. I mean, they are dominating across the age levels. I said that earlier. But I think the US were kind of this unbeatable monster for 20 years, you know, for a long, long, long time. And I think, yes, Spain will dominate and be in many finals and win many tournaments. But I don't think they're going to have that same, just being unbeatable. You know, that kind of way. And I'm sure I'm going to get a load of people in my mentions thinking that I'm saying Spain aren't good, which clearly isn't the case.
That is not what Rachel has said.
I think comparing it to the dominance of the US national team, it's a very hard feat to replicate.
It's a big bar.
Yeah, but I do think Spain are going to be a very, very dominant force for quite a while.
Well, obviously, I mean, the team have come off the back of quite a lot of adversity in the last year with everything that happened with Rubiales. The Spain manager, obviously, sort of, you know, after the game against the Netherlands, was saying, you know, she took charge in a very difficult moment. Nobody wanted, and we took a step forward. We're proud of the work that we've done. This team deserves to play in Olympic Games. And after all the prior generations who fought for it and came up short. So maybe this is their moment in the sun era coming up. Maybe not as long as the US, but definitely an era of some length of dominance. Is that fair?
Okay. I think dominant, fair. I think saying they're going to be the next US team is...
too high.
It's just not, maybe. A little bit.
All right. Well, there's been lots of controversy around Alexia Putellas being called up by Spain after Barcelona said she wouldn't be fit before the international break. The last time she played in Liga F was mid-November after she felt some pain in her knee at the start of the season. I mean, Barcelona have been quite cautious since then. And at the end of December, she underwent keyhole surgery to find out what was going on. And the club have now claimed that she's gone on international duty without being cleared to do so by the club's doctors. I mean, this is obviously going to create quite a lot of tension between club and country. She's clearly not at full fitness yet. And it seems a little bit wild to be then taking a player who clearly isn't sort of back to normality yet into such a sort of strenuous time.
But they don't need her.
And it's that. It kind of feels a bit, she's not surplus to requirements, but at the moment, you know, she can be afforded that grace period while she sort of, you know, really gets back to full fitness, because the squad are doing so well.
I'd like to hear more on it, because, you know, it seems very strange to go against your club's recommendations, particularly given, like we say, Spain didn't necessarily have to have her in order to win the games. You know, maybe she went to be part of the squad, to be integrated back into the squad for her leadership, but also then the team is full of leaders as well. So it's an interesting one. I think we're seeing a bit of that with some players. Like, you look at Viv Miedema, who clearly wasn't fit ahead of that Manchester United game for Arsenal. There was footage going around of her limping into the stadium before the match. She didn't warm up. And then for some reason, she still came on at the end of the game, which I just thought was absolutely bizarre when they were 3-0 up. She goes to the Netherlands, which I'm surprised at, because I remember at the Man City game, they said it was a bit of a knee irritation. So I assumed she was going to have a bit of a break, but apparently not. And they play her for the first half. And there's footage after the second Spain goal in the highlights of Miedema. And she's quite clearly not walking comfortably on the pitch. So I can't really understand, you know, we talk about, it's one thing overloading fit players. Like, it's a whole other thing to be taking risks on players who aren't fully fit and are coming back from major injuries. So, you know, like I said, I don't know the ins and outs of Piteous. Maybe she went and was in camp and kind of in and around the players, whatever. But the idea of kind of taking risks on players coming back from injury just seems totally unnecessary.
I think it's that I can kind of understand it from a maybe team morale, or, you know, to try and sort of bolster the team. She's obviously a big presence. You know, she's been in and around the setup for such a long period of time. You've got a lot of youngsters in the squad who are coming up. They might need that kind of, you know, experience, support, you know, shoulder to kind of lean on throughout sort of these big tournament moments. But also the whole benefit of having this sort of international they could be used as an international break, essentially, where she does sort of get that respite, where she does, you know, get that time to have a rehab so that she can come back to things properly and give herself the best possible chance of, you know, playing in the Olympics, and also, you know, to look at the longer term and going into the Euros in 2025. So I think it feels very short-term vision from Spain to be able to do that, unless they're sort of, you know, going forwards just going to use her as sort of like a friendly figure around camp and not.
But also, they've so much quality. Are you going to, not waste is the wrong word, but are you going to call up a player who's just not going to play at all? I don't know. That's just an interesting one.
I think we've sort of alluded to it a bit now, that it kind of feels like the Spain team almost has been able to move on without her. I mean, Bon Mati obviously had an incredible World Cup, you know, picked up the Ballon d'Or, you know, she has sort of put herself in Piteous's place, and I hope that doesn't sound too savage, but I mean, she's absolutely nailing it. So you kind of think, well, you know, Piteous, I think, was sort of heralded as the kind of talisman of the Spanish squad, but I think now that the ACL injury almost sort of gave more spotlight to actually the fact that Spain was already full of this incredible talent, and it wasn't just her sort of, you know, being the shining spotlight of the team, it was everyone else on the pitch as well.
Yeah, sure, but I mean, you look at, I mean, England got to a World Cup final without Lee Williamson and Beth Mead. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean they're not incredibly valuable and necessary in the team.
Of course.
It has allowed, and it's like that, yeah, it's, I wouldn't say allowed others to shine. I think at the timing at which she did her ACL, like, Spain was growing and the kind of eyes on Spain had been growing. Do you know what I mean? So I think that continued to grow after she got injured. It's always going to be different for players. We've talked about this, coming back from ACL. No one's going to come back to their absolute best. I think Beth Mead currently is a bit of an anomaly. But it is going to be very different for different players. And I think when you're someone like Alexia Piteous, who has set the bar as being the world's best player, you know, winning the awards, that's a long way to get back up to that. And it just takes time. I think the fact that she's come back from an ACL injury and she's back in the best squad in the world and back in the national team is pretty incredible. I'd give her time, give her a break.
Yeah, I mean, she deserves time. I mean, this all comes at a time when her Barcelona talks, the contract talks, still haven't been settled. She sort of wants a 3-year contract extension, and Barcelona are kind of pegging themselves to a 2-year extension. So we'll kind of see how those contract negotiations pan out. The inaugural final of the Nations League will be between Spain and France on Wednesday. Rach, who are you backing?
Spain.
That was so easy. That was absolutely so easy. And I've got to agree. That's not any kind of, you know, disrespect to France at all. But Spain, I mean, just look at the lineup, to be honest. It's stellar.
I think they're in different places in their journey as well. You know, I think France have been going through this shift with the new manager and stuff like that. So you have to factor in that they're in different places in their journey. I don't think, I'm probably going to jinx it now, but I don't think it's going to be like 5-6-7-0.
No.
I think it'll be a really, really competitive game. But I do think Spain are going to edge it.
Do I peg you to a score prediction?
3-2.
I'm going to go 2-1. We will put a pint of... What are we having? What do we have in the US? Not the US, the Australia. What do we have? What was that?
Not a pint.
No.
Not, our tipple of choice was wine.
It was, and too much of it. All right, a glass of wine the next time I see you. When you're back from Marbs enjoying your absolute best life.
The next time I see you at 9 a.m. on Tuesday. Lovely.
Yes. Right, thank you so much for listening. Where are we this weekend, Rach? When are you coming back? When are you coming back home?
I'm doing the Nations League final tomorrow, and then I think I've got West Ham Man United on Sunday, I want to say.
Oh, nice.
I need to take off my international break hat and put on the WSL one.
Well, because I'm off at the moment doing a course. I don't have to sort of go to the games and sort of follow the games as much as I was sort of doing before. So I think I actually get time to like actually go down to see a game, which would be quite nice. But I think I might actually see you on West Ham Man United, because given what West Ham did with Arsenal, I kind of feel like it's nothing could be guaranteed this year. Maybe I'll see you on Sunday for that pint of wine when I get my score predictions right. In the meantime, you can find us on Instagram and X. I am at Morgie_89, Rach is at Girls on the Ball, and we are at Upfront_pod. You can also find us on YouTube at Upfront Pod. See you next week.
Upfront is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
was good with them, you know. And then we're way around the duck.
So if you fancy a sit down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.